Not a clutch team.
They're not. No, they are not.
Not a clutch team.
They might as well. I think they should.
Smart, Tice, and Picks.
Live from ETIN Studios, this is Colbert and Dubs.
Very pleasant good evening and welcome to Colbert and Dubs. I'm Ryan Dubs Ribeiro. I'd like to say I'm alongside my co-host Jared Colbert, but he is not yet here right now. But we've got our producer Rachel Lowe back behind the glass, ready to rock. Remember to follow our Twitter page at Colbert and Dubs and our Facebook and Instagram page under the show's name. We're also on SoundCloud and on the podcast app for Apple devices, where you can find all of our episodes under the search name Colbert and Dubs. If you'd like to ask a question or have your voice heard throughout the show, call the number 617-824-8100. So, NBA, or the college football, actually. Well, first of all, Rachel, I feel like we should address the obvious here before we hop into college football, that where is Mr. Colbert? Do you have an update right now?
I just got a text from Colbert.
All right, let's read it.
6:05.
He said 6:05. That means we got four minutes to burn without Jared. That's crazy. Do we have a reason as to why he's not here right now?
He says, blank, I fell asleep.
Ooh. Tough time to take a nap, like an hour before the show.
But
while he's sleeping, we'll try and attack some topics right now. Clemson beat down on Boston College on Saturday night on ESPN. That was a tough game for Boston College. Their starting quarterback, Anthony Brown, was hurt on the first drive of the game. Sixth play of the game for Boston College. You go down, you lead your starting quarterback. EJ Perry comes in, and you try and work with what you've got. But, you know, the game plan just doesn't really account for that. When you have a guy, when you have a quarterback who does not get reps with the ones consistently every week, it's an issue. You cannot go into a game because then Clemson stacks the box. They already have four first round talents on that defensive line. So it's difficult enough to try and get the running game going with A.J. Dillon. And now you've got to do it without your starting quarterback, without a real game plan. They ran a lot of read option. They ran the ball a lot with Perry and with Dillon. They just really couldn't get anything going on offense. Reason why they only scored 7 points in the game, and it was off a punt return touchdown. And you look at Clemson on the other side of the ball. Trevor Lawrence was phenomenal. That defense, again, just absolutely stellar against hampered Boston College offense, but a good Boston College offense nonetheless. And EJ Perry is a good quarterback, but at the end of the day, when you don't have your starting quarterback, make things tough. Not many excuses there. Clemson played great. Boston College just wasn't up for it on Saturday, and you know they dropped to 20. And Clemson now is being looked at as the only team that can hang with Alabama. That defense, I could see it if they're able to stop Tua Tagovailoa, but right now it doesn't really look like that. And then you've got Notre Dame just beaten down on Florida State. The only reason we're talking about Notre Dame, they're number three, and that's my guy, Brandon Wimbush, stepping in at quarterback. Yes, he threw two picks. He also threw three touchdowns. That's a pretty good day if you're Brandon Wimbush. You know, you want to lower down on the interceptions, but at this point, you're a backup, and you're just trying to help your team win. He did a great job of that. You know, there's nothing really much else to say other than, you know, the University of Central Florida, once again, not being looked at all in these rankings in terms of a legitimate contender. Yes, they do not have a single win against a ranked opponent all year, but you know, at the end of the day, they're undefeated. They've won 22 straight games. When you win 22 straight games, you should be recognized in some way, and being number 10 just isn't enough. It's not enough right now. Again, I wish Mr. Colbert. Oh, there he is.
Mr. Colbert.
Jared Colbert in the flesh. How are you?
How was your nap, Colbert?
I'm good, I guess.
We're rocking and rolling here. We're about to talk UCF. We've got Clemson already tackled. Wimbush. We'll talk some Michigan, Kentucky. Right now we're scrambling. Rachel, whoa. There was no update? You just walked in? We were on Colbert watch over here.
You were having a good time with a soundboard. I didn't want to crush your dreams.
That's a good point. Thanks. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So as Jared sits up his jacket. Yeah, we can go back to Notre Dame for a second because right now they're undefeated. And it kind of begs the question whether or not if they lose coming into, you know, going into the final stretch. They play Syracuse this weekend. And, you know, if they lose one of these games at the end to finish their season, are they still going to be considered for the top four? It's a question that really can't be answered, because if you're a team like Alabama, I don't know if you lose, are you able? You will still be in the top four, no doubt. If you're Clemson, if you lose, you'll most likely be in the top four no matter what. I don't know if you could say much of the same for Notre Dame. They've had a tough schedule, but they've also had a tough go of things against weak teams, one of them being, you know, Ball State. And just, you know, Florida State, they were finally able to beat up on a very bad team, and that's a good look for them moving forward. But it's not something that you really want to see if you are Notre Dame. It's, you know, it's Syracuse is a tough opponent, no doubt, but it's not, it really isn't. It's not a good strategy moving forward if you're Notre Dame to say, I think we can lose and still be in the top four. Alabama obviously has that because they've earned that reputation. When your starting quarterback has only thrown one pass or two or three passes in the fourth quarter, and that happened on November 3rd of this year, so a little over 2 months into the season, it took your starting quarterback to throw just a general pass in the fourth quarter. You know, that's saying something about the talent on your team and the level of competitiveness that all of those guys have, and that the game, they play three-quarter football, like we've said on the show, but three-quarter football in the good way, where you don't really have to worry about going to the fourth quarter, blowing a lead, or it's a coin toss going to the fourth, it's a close game. You just, you don't have to worry about it if you're Alabama. It's never an issue because you're always there. And then you look at the University of Michigan, who beat down on Penn State not too long ago. That's a team that's number four right now with one loss. And, you know, a few weeks ago we were talking about, is it them or is it University of Texas that makes it in if they win out? University of Texas is bowed out. They lost to Oklahoma State pretty badly. And Michigan beat up on Rutgers this weekend, which, again, is expected if you were the University of Michigan. But looking at them for the rest of their season, the only way you can really tell if they are battle-tested with these final three games, if they're ready to win, or if they're ready to be a serious threat in the college football playoff, is if they beat Ohio State. Number 10, big rival, probably the biggest, one of the biggest rivalries in all of sports, definitely the biggest rivalry in college football. If you win that game, you're legit. And if you don't win that game, then you should probably be considered as one of the teams on the outside looking in. So that's Michigan as of right now. But for now, Mr. Colbert's settling in. Get that mic up.
I get it going. There you go. You got it.
Got it up?
You got it.
You know, they don't call me the tech guy around here, but you know, I figured it out. Played with the buttons before the show.
Things are nicely labeled, I think.
Yeah. We've got this is weird. This is... Now everyone who's watched the show has always complained about the angle. They've got the beautiful angle right now of you. I mean, you look like you just woke up from a nap, which you did.
Surprise,
but
surprise.
That's what happened.
It's about accurate.
Yeah, it's a pretty accurate statement to say that. But all right, college football. I've been jabbing away for the past 8 minutes. What's your take on Clemson? Clemson beats Boston College. There's not much to talk about there. The starting quarterback goes down in the first drive. You don't really have a chance. But is Clemson one of those teams for you that you look at and say they can absolutely hang in there with Alabama? Or is just Alabama one of those teams that this year nobody's going to be able to hang with?
I wouldn't say absolutely hang in there, because we haven't really... kind of seen that. They obviously played some tough teams throughout the season, but they haven't. Alabama's a different animal. There's no team you can play in college football that's gonna prepare you for Alabama. It's Alabama, or you're playing a team that's a whole tier below them.
Right.
And so early on, we were always complaining that Clemson was only in the top four because of how they did last year. But I think as the season's progressed, I think Clemson has become stronger and stronger throughout the season, kind of learning how to play without Deshaun Watson.
Well, their quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, has been phenomenal. It's their defense that's their trademark, and their defense that if they're going to play a game against Alabama and compete, they're going to have to be, I don't want to say perfect, but they're going to have to bring their A game, because their defense does have talent. Their defense has loads of talent in terms of, like, you look at the draft, there's first round talent everywhere in that defense. And they show it time and time again. When they win, they dominate, they stifle offenses, and they did it against Boston College. They've been doing it all season. So if you're Clemson, it's really Alabama's offense versus your defense. Do you have enough confidence in that Clemson defense to say, do you have enough confidence in that Clemson defense to say, yes, they can stop the best quarterback in college football in maybe a decade in Tua Tagovailoa?
Any time you have a defense versus an offense, it always feels like advantage to the best defense. I feel like especially in the NFL all the time, in the Super Bowl, it's like, oh, here's the number one offense and here's the number one defense. And then the defense just completely stifles them, and it's not even a contest.
Right, and we thought the same thing with LSU, where it's like, you know, maybe they'll be the team that hangs in there, but they weren't.
But it's not that easy, because Alabama also has a suffocating defense.
Right.
And so it's
defense
versus Alabama's offense, but then it's also Alabama's defense versus Clemson offense, and it kind of feels like both scenarios that Alabama's going to have the advantage.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree, because while Tua is definitely the story for Alabama, that defense, like you mentioned, is stellar on its own. So, you know, if you're Clemson, you can say, yeah, we have a great defense, but is your offense going to be able to keep up? Is your offense going to be able to beat one of the best defenses in the SEC, one of the best teams just in college football that maybe we've ever seen? Because I don't know if this team has a weakness. I just haven't seen it. So, wanted to get to UCF real quick, because guess who won? UCF. Guess who didn't move in the college football standings? UCF.
They got one spot.
Oh, they bumped up?
They got one spot.
There we go.
Kentucky fell.
Right, and because so Kentucky shouldn't have been there in the first place.
They had an obligatory bump up to where Kentucky was.
There you go.
I feel like the college football committee kind of sat around and went, ugh, fine, we'll move them up. Jesus.
If you're UCF, do you have any hope at this point? Say maybe we get into the top four. Maybe we're considered.
No, I think this is it.
Right. Like
if they wanted to test you out, they would have put you up there, kind of put the pressure on, and then see what happens.
But they're not.
They've been so adamant on ranking them, you know, 12th, 11th, kind of in that range. Maybe they'll get 10th. Maybe they'll get a top 10.
Right.
But they're 9-0. Only
22 straight.
One or two games left in the season.
I think two.
Two games.
They play Cincinnati this weekend. That'll be their first ranked opponent this year, I believe. They're number 24. I don't think that's enough.
Nothing is enough. They have...
No, if they were to play like LSU right now and then beat LSU, then you could be
right,
like, whoa.
That would be like they beat a playoff caliber team.
Right, like they did last year when they beat Auburn, but still it didn't mean anything to the committee apparently. Yeah.
And so a win over Cincinnati.
Right. I mean, they are 24, so you could say like, oh, that's their ranked opponent. But I don't believe that'll actually do anything for them. Maybe it'll bump them up one more spot, maybe two, but in terms of giving them, you know, a look at the college football playoff, I don't think so. Even if they win their conference championship game, they're not playing anyone significant enough to convince the committee that they should be there. Whether or not me or you believe they should be there, it doesn't really seem to matter.
It's not like they're in the SEC where if they win that conference championship, it's like, well, they beat a lot of good teams.
Yeah.
It's the whatever they're in. I don't even know.
Yeah, and you could say that, you know, the college football committee kind of protects the SEC, but the SEC has great teams.
It's a good division.
Right. It's a really good division, and they have great teams. But I also don't think that you should be ignoring teams that play phenomenally on, you know, in conferences that maybe aren't looked at as much. Just because this team doesn't play constant great competition week in and week out doesn't mean they're not a great team. Because that's how I view UCF. If you win 22 straight games in college football, you're Division I, you're in the FBS, you're a great team. They have won 22 straight games. I don't know what else you can do.
And it's not like they're scraping by every game. I mean, only beat Memphis 31-30, but other than that, they've been putting the hurt on some of these it's the American Athletic Conference.
Right, yes. The
other AAC.
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 Yes.
And like you said, they've been dominating 22 straight. I mean, I know you're not supposed to take into consideration last season, but in this particular case, I think you do. You didn't give them the opportunity last year, and now they're doing it again. They're like, okay, well,
right?
We didn't make it to the top four last year. Maybe if we go undefeated again this season, maybe things will be different. No, things are still the same. Newsflash, UCF, they still don't like you. I don't know what they'll have to do. Next year,
pack the schedule.
Stack the box.
Yes, there you go. Stack that box. That's the only thing I can say.
I want them, I mean, maybe not like 1 through 10 of the ranked opponents, but like...
No, because that's unfair.
I feel like every other week, just be like, all right, here's a good team.
Right. And then prove it. Prove it. I think they've proven it to me already, but... You know.
Right, because the only ranked opponent they're playing is because Cincinnati's in their division.
Yeah. And that, yeah, 24. So that won't mean anything.
Like, you give them this crap schedule, they burn through it, and then you're like, nah, you guys had a crap schedule. Like, well, whose fault is that then?
Right. I did hear, and I don't know if you can fact check this for me, but I do believe the athletic director and head coach make the schedule, if I'm not wrong. I could be wrong. There's like a 50% chance that I'm wrong.
Just a quick Google search of who makes a schedule for college football.
Let's see. If only we had the audio for a drum roll.
No clear answer here.
Right.
Let's go to Bleacher Report. See what they know.
Skim through a quick article.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that.
So obviously, conference games are kind of like.
Right, that's set in stone. Right. It's like division games in the NFL. You don't have to say, "Oh, let's play the Eagles this year if you're the Cowboys." Right. Non-conference? Not real.
Some conferences have designated non-conference weekends to ensure more uniformity in schedule of their leagues.
I believe that the athletic directors do, because it's like those low I don't want to say low quality, but like lower end Division I teams, like UMass will take a trip up to Boston College every year to play them. And it's like, okay, they have no chance, but it's more of like a money game for them, because they get national exposure, they get on television, they're playing a big team. So yeah, a lot of their guys get cracked and they get hurt, but for the school, it makes money.
I think you're right. I think it is up to the school.
Yes.
Because they're just talking about like... the schools, they're basically saying the schools get to pick out outside of conference games.
Right. So that's...
So maybe it's UCF's fault for...
Yeah, maybe it's just, you know, maybe get gutsy next year and
maybe
stack the box, like you said, right. So, yeah, maybe it is their fault. But again...
But I don't like that thought, so...
Right, yeah, so we'll just push that aside, pretend like it doesn't exist. Yeah, we'll just keep being angry at the NCAA.
The NCAA does enough wrong that we can blame them for something that's not their fault.
So, that's college football. We've spent enough breath on that. NBA.
NBA, baby.
There's a lot to talk about with the NBA. First of all, let's go to the Celtics. The 7-6 Boston Celtics. If I were to tell you right now, if I were to tell you weeks ago, right before the NBA season started, that the Celtics would be 7-6, 13 games into the season, what would you say?
I'd say I don't believe you.
Right. So you're looking at this right now. I don't want to say...
I'd say like you could convince me if it was like 8-5, 9-4.
Right.
You could convince me of that.
But 7-6 is like, I'm like, it's borderline 500. Like, right.
Did Hayward snap his ankle again?
Yeah. So who do you put the blame on right now for going 7-6? Because there's got to be some blame tossing around. 7-6 is not good. I'm not saying let's worry, let's smash some panic buttons, but who are you blaming?
You can't pinpoint it on one person. No, like, is Hayward playing at all-star Hayward self? No, he's not.
Not close.
It's almost like, you know, he didn't play basketball for a full year and he's recovering from an injury, guys. Right. Like,
pump
get
the
off
brakes.
The man's back. Jesus. And then Celtics Twitter is a whole thing. People are calling the Anthony Davis trade rumors are firing up again, which we don't want to touch. We don't want to get close to that.
I am back on that train.
Jaylen Brown is getting a lot of blame. I think it's growing pains. I mean, you think last year, and like last year was, you know, a whole new roster and people are getting back, people are figuring out. They figured it out faster than this year's Celtics. But this year you are adding Gordon Hayward, a starting caliber player and a guy who commands the ball's attention sometime. You have to work in this whole new cog into your system that you didn't have last year. And it's affecting guys like Jaylen Brown last year, you know, kind of you think of offensive priority, you're probably thinking Irving and then Tatum really shone out. And then it was probably Brown or Horford who was kind of that third option guy. And now all of a sudden Jaylen Brown's not the, he's definitely the fourth option, I think, with Hayward into the system.
Right.
Hayward, obviously, growing pains coming back from injury. I say pump the brakes on him. And then I think part of it can go to Brad Stevens, where it is rotations. You do have Gordon Hayward on this minute restrictions, but I don't think that should be affecting everyone the way that it is.
And not to play devil's advocate, but Brad Stevens does do a good job in realizing when someone like Marcus Morris needs to come into the game. Because a lot of times when it comes down to crunch time, you see someone like Tatum or you see someone like Brown take a seat and Morris comes in and provides that veteran presence to step in and know when to take a shot, when to take a good shot. And oftentimes he's the guy who saves the game for the Celtics, at least so far this year and a lot of time last year. So
I saw it in Phoenix at the
right
game tying three.
Yeah. And you
saw 0 seconds on the clock.
Perfect. That's exactly what you need if you're the Celtics. You need someone who can hop off the bench and do that when you need it. And I think he utilizes Marcus Morris well. But I do agree. I think, you know, rotation is key. Maybe you're playing Gordon Hayward a little bit too much than he's ready for right now. But I don't know.
Or some people are even arguing that he's not. He wants to play more. He's used to playing more minutes.
Yeah.
But they're holding him at a certain level. And so it's kind of throwing him off.
And I think also Kyrie's request for a 14, 15-year veteran, I think it's a little weak of a move. You know, if you're Kyrie, you wanted to step away from Cleveland, you wanted to step away from LeBron because you wanted a team to yourself, and now you're going for, like, maybe we should have someone who's been in here for close to 2 decades in the NBA to step up and have this veteran leadership. That's what Al Horford's there for, and that's what you're there for.
Right.
You know, I don't really understand why he can't take the ownership of himself and say, I could do a better job. You know, we all can do a better job of stepping up. Because, you know, Jaylen Brown is 23 years old, yes, but he's not a baby in terms of the league anymore. Marcus Smart is young, but he's not a baby in terms of how long he's been in the league. You have young guys, but you also have somewhat of an experience. Jason Tatum's the only one who's only been there for a year. You have guys there. Why are you requesting this? Why do you need it so badly?
Yeah, I do find that a little weird, especially when they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals without this veteran presence, and now you have Gordon Hayward back. Where, while Hayward hasn't been to the playoffs all that much out there in Utah, you know, he's still been in the league long enough. Like during the regular season, he should be enough. Can we interject with some MLB talk real quick?
Oh man. The
breaking news, AL Cy Young Award winner was announced.
Only the AL.
Only the AL so far. I only got the AL notification. Ooh. Here.
Is it can I take a guess before
you
tell me?
Take a guess.
I think it's gonna be Blake Snell.
It is Blake Snell.
Oh, cha-ching. Blake Snell of the Tampa Bay Rays, your AL Cy Young. Wow. That's big news.
That's stupid. Personally.
Who did you think was gonna win?
Personally. Chris Sale.
But he wasn't a finalist.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Who was it?
It was Blake Snell, Trevor Bauer, and Justin Verlander.
No, it was Snell. Was it Kluber?
Kluber, my apologies. And Verlander.
Verlander.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be Kluber. then.
Kluber had a good season. I thought Trevor Bauer had a better one. He had a lower ERA, and you know, Kluber's that strikeout guy, but I don't know. I like what Bauer brought.
Like Sale, also not a finalist.
Yeah, I know. Which is unfortunate.
Which is ridiculous. I thought everyone's like, oh, Chris Sale didn't pitch enough innings. Like
when he was there, he was the best.
Yeah, I'm sorry. He still went like, he still pitched like, I think 30 games, close to 30 games.
Right. Should have been enough.
Should have been enough.
That's not. Anyway, Blake Snell, your AL Cy Young 2018. Look at that. Who would have ever thought? Before the season, if you said Blake Snell was going to be the Cy Young winner, I don't think I would have believed you.
I wouldn't have. I probably would have went, who's Blake Snell?
Yeah. Like, what team?
It was like, probably around like July, August. We're like, oh, Blake Snell's doing so good. I'm like, who? I thought the Rays got rid of all their good pitching. I thought right. They had nothing left.
Yeah. No.
They had one guy left. But whatever.
Shipped off Chris Archer, but he didn't do that great for Pittsburgh. But beside the point there, NBA. Yeah, back to the NBA. I did think it was weird. I agree. I think it is weird for him to request a veteran presence because they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year.
Because, like, years in the NBA almost mean nothing versus, like, how far you go in the playoffs. Like, the Celtics have plenty of guys who have been in the Eastern Conference Finals, have taken it to Game 7. Basically everyone from the roster.
Roster.
Look, man. I didn't set an alarm for myself.
You're still waking up.
Still waking up. Bit of a cold.
Oh.
Don't worry. Have I sneezed yet? No.
Not yet.
Not yet. I won't sneeze. I promise.
Go for it.
Say as I get that feeling. basically everyone on the roster. I mean, Kyrie Irving won a championship, for crying out loud.
He did.
Say you bring in someone like Carmelo Anthony.
Oh, please no.
He's like one of the few guys that like checks off the box.
Yeah, of like 14, 15 years.
14-year veteran is actually available.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people are left. Maybe bring back KG. Who knows? He's probably still there. Anyway, say you bring in a guy like that. What has he done? How far has he gotten?
Right.
In the playoffs? Like, what does he add?
Never been to a conference final.
Right. Jason Tatum has.
Correct. And
Jason Tatum, yeah, he only has 1 year experience, but how many guys can say they have the experience of dunking on LeBron James in the Eastern Conference Finals?
And then chest bumping him.
And then chest bumping him on the way back. And
nobody.
And then King James having nothing to do but just kind of like let him go because he did
nobody.
Just dunk on you.
Yeah.
Nobody. Not a lot of people.
I mean, King James did have the ultimate last laugh when he just poured on 20 points and then beat them in game 7. But, you know,
right. it took the Celtics to have one of the worst shooting performances in history.
Right.
But that's what I'm saying is some guys can go a career without having kind of like that experience of getting that far, of doing the things that he's done. And so I'd argue that this Celtics roster has lots of experience.
Yes, I would agree. Again, Al Horford,
even with
Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward.
Just take the last year.
Yeah. Everyone now has experience. You shouldn't have to have some old man hop in and be like, listen, boys, this is how it's done. You shouldn't have to do that. That's not right. What Brad Stevens is about. That's not what Al Horford's about. That's not what Kyrie Irving's about. And it freaks me out that he would say something like that because there's something wrong. I'm not saying there's a locker room issue, but what I am saying is like,
far from it.
Right. There's no locker room issue. They all seem to get along with each other more.
We want to talk about a team with real locker room issues. They too.
We'll get there. Yeah. You know, I don't like Kyrie Irving suggesting that as a star player, as a key player, the guy who came over here and you were the guy. It's not a good look. It's not a good look. But it was almost a good transition that we hit with the Warriors because
it is a good transition.
It's almost like a Kardashian like saga over there in Golden State because KD and Draymond Green, they've got beef. They've got heavy beef. So would you like to explain the scenario?
I would like to explain because it's hilarious.
Go ahead.
So I'll say be aware that Kevin Durant in his entire tenure at Golden State has signed a 1+1 deals, which is he signs for the year, has a player option if he wants it, but always declines it and just signs another 1+1. So he's never been contractually obliged to stay in Golden State ever.
Right. It's always just like, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. And it's kind of been given that he'd stick around. You know, yeah. Who wouldn't want to leave this situation? But the option has always been there. And this year, it kind of felt like, okay, if he has 3 titles, like, he's done his work, he'll go somewhere else. Like, there was kind of that feeling like, how much more can he do in Golden State?
Yeah.
And so, in a recent game, I forget who it was against, but
It was against Los Angeles Clippers.
So it was against the Clippers, kind of final moments. Draymond Green grabs a rebound, essentially grabs a rebound from Kevin Durant, and then just takes the ball up himself. And did they lose the game?
They did, because he didn't get that shot off in time, and then they went to overtime and ended up losing that game.
So, yeah, so tie ball game, Draymond Green keeps the ball for himself, doesn't give it to Kevin Durant in time. They eventually lose the game. But in the huddle afterwards, Kevin Durant was like, hey, why don't you pass the ball?
Right.
Like, pass me the ball.
Yeah.
And Draymond Green essentially called him out on his contract situation.
In the middle of a game.
In the middle of a game. During the timeout, transition from fourth quarter to overtime, calls him a B word.
Yeah.
I don't think we can say that. calls him a B word. And basically just is just like, why, like, where's the commitment, bro?
Yeah.
And Kevin Durant was like, you want to do this now?
Yeah.
Like, now's the time to call me out on this? Like, I just wanted the ball because, you know, Kevin Durant, newsflash, is a better shooter than Draymond Green.
By a mile.
By a good chunk, I'd say.
Yeah.
And so, in ensuing moments, kind of in the days after that, it just like, you don't resolve that.
Well, they suspended Draymond
without pay for calling a fellow teammate a B-word.
Right, they called it conduct detrimental to the team is how they officially labeled it.
I'd say that's a good label.
Yeah,
it's a good business label in that situation.
It's a pretty fair label. But so that happened. And if you had to take a side on that, would you say your team KD or your team Draymond?
See, they both have points. I think Draymond just handled it worse.
Way worse.
Than Kevin Durant handled it. Because it's true. When LeBron went to Miami, he was like, all right, give me the 4-year contract. We're in it to win it.
Right.
We're gonna win 4, 5, 6 titles. Newsflash, didn't. But... like, he was there for the 4 years, and he was like, we're going to do this for the 4 years. And when things didn't go right the first year, he couldn't leave. So he said, all right, we'll figure it out. And they won the next 2 years. Kevin Durant here, as many team-friendly deals as he has taken, they've all been one-year contracts. Like, there has been no commitment whatsoever. The Golden State Warriors, to him, is a destination on his career path, or is a temporary stop.
It reminds me of LeBron with Miami.
Right, but it's even less commitment. It's like,
you're right. It's like 1 year deal after 1 year deal.
Dangling the dollar bill on the fishing pole in that State Farm commercial.
Shout out to State Farm.
Am I gonna shout out to Chris Paul? He's a State Farm guy. Like, dangling the dollar bill over the Warriors' heads, like, oh, am I gonna re-sign with you? And for the past few seasons, it's been like, yeah, of course he is. Like, why would he leave? But now it's like, all right, he has his 3 titles. I think Draymond Green's contract is up.
Yeah, so Draymond Green wants a payday in Golden State, which makes sense.
Someone's contract is up.
I think it's Clay.
Like Clay, so like someone of the core group.
Right.
And so now it's kind of like, okay, are they going to re-up Clay for presumably a long term? Like, he's been a Warrior for life so far. So if you're re-signing him, you're going to give him the superstar treatment there.
Right.
Or is it prioritize Kevin Durant, who is the better player, but then kind of like, sorry, Clay, kick him to the curb a bit. And so now there's real fear that Kevin Durant's going to leave. Deserve
Which
to
is,
so.
Right.
I think he is. And I think this was the nail in the coffin that, all right, see ya. I'm not going to play with you guys.
Yeah, and it begs the question, are they going to be able to survive something like this I think they are only because they're so damn talented.
They are really good.
Right. I find it hard to believe.
There's a team that's going to
push through this.
Be able to manage.
Right. And Draymond Green did allude to this at the end of the last season when he was like, oh, there's bigger issues going on in the locker room that you guys don't know about. Well, I guess we figured out what that is about. So it'll be interesting because, you know, the Warriors don't really have they don't really have an issue in terms of talent. They've got the league's gold up and down, and when Boogie Cousins comes back, it's like it's an embarrassment of riches. So you got to see how things turn out. But that's definitely not a good start to your locker room. And real quick before we jump to the NFL or we get to the special edition of this week's breakdown, Jimmy Butler on Saturday, I believe. Yeah, whatever. The weekend. Saturday.
Yeah.
Was traded to the Philadelphia 76ers for Dario Saric, Robert Covington, and a second-round pick.
Don't forget Jared Bayless. I forgot Jared Bayless.
Yeah. If you're Minnesota.
Did Minnesota keep him?
If you Minnesota traded someone away, I think it was a bench guy.
Yeah.
But if you're Minnesota, what are you doing? Why this deal?
My theory is that everyone remembers that 4 first-round picks the Rockets were allegedly offering.
Yes.
I'm going to guess that was BS.
You think so?
Because if that was the case, oh my God, are they stupid. And declining that. But it was never a tangible thing. It was just like Rockets might be offering 4 first-round picks. Like Daryl Morey allegedly, you know, throwing in the kitchen sink in this deal.
Yeah.
And so, because nothing happened from there, either Tom Thibodeau and whoever the GM is of Minnesota are really that stupid turning that down and then blowing that deal.
They could have said to that Houston deal, no thanks, and then got the Philly deal and was like, hold on, let us call Houston real quick, and then Houston would have been like, yeah, we're not no longer interested. That was like, you know what I mean? You ever watch that movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner when he's on the phone with the guy in Seattle? And they offer for the first overall pick. No, Cleveland's trying to get the first overall pick, and Kevin Costner's like, all right, I'll give you 2 first-round picks. He's like, all right, hold on. Guy from Seattle puts the phone down for 30 seconds, picks it back up and goes, 3 first-round picks and a second rounder. He's like, Kevin Costner's like, what's going on? Like, why? Well, what happened? And he's like, we live in a different world than we did 30 seconds ago. That's what you could say if you're Houston. Pick up the phone and be like, no, never mind. We live in a different world than we did last week. Bam.
Yeah, maybe
get screwed with the Philly deal.
Houston like leaked that offer, and then the entirety of Houston was like, did you see what happened in Brooklyn? And then they're like, maybe this isn't a good idea for the 1-year rental of Jimmy Butler.
Right. So now he's in Philly, and does it make them a contender? I don't think so. They have no depth now.
They don't have a lot of depth.
At all. And they're still very young and still trying to figure things out, and Markelle Fultz is awful.
And still, they're only real shooters, J.J. Redick.
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Like, Jimmy Butler is good, obviously.
Right.
But I feel like that was Philly foaming at the mouth of a name-brand player.
Yes. Agreed. Because they were heavy in trying to get LeBron. LeBron had just already made up
right,
his mind like 3 years ago.
That's signing. That's not giving up anything. You're only giving up cash.
No, I'm just talking about in the offseason, it was LeBron, it was Kawhi, and then now, when Jimmy Butler is so obviously wanting to get out of Minnesota, did they go, we need a star name. Jimmy Butler is great. Jimmy Butler is a all-star perennially.
He'll help them.
He will help them. Does it make them a contender? No. I still like Milwaukee better. I still like Toronto better. And that's with Toronto, with the way that they play in the postseason. And I still like Boston better. I could even argue I like Indiana better. I just don't like the Sixers team. Indiana, you agree with the other teams, though.
I agree. I would like to obviously see more out of the Celtics.
Right.
I'm not going to like say, oh, Celtics are going to be in the finals. I'm not going to be there yet. They have obviously tempered my expectations, which maybe was their goal. They're like, oh, expectations are too high right now. We need to be the underdogs again.
Yeah.
They hated being the favorites. They've always been the other underdogs for the past 4 years.
Yeah.
So maybe that was the grand scheme of things. But I was scrolling through Instagram, and I saw in like my or on the recommended page, there was like a Sixers fan account, and it proposed the starting lineup of Markelle Fultz, J.J. Redick, Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid. And that would be terrible. The Sixers have not gone with that option because, A, Markelle Fultz, not yet a starting caliber player.
I haven't seen enough from him to say that he is a starting caliber player.
He's not at all.
Right. He's bad.
He is 20 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, obviously.
But his shot is broken. His free throw.
You saw the double clutch?
Yeah, there's like, every week there's a new highlight.
It almost looked like he went for it and then went, hold on a second, and then went, now I have to shoot the ball. but then also, Ben Simmons at the four, say they played the Celtics, he'd get bullied by Al Horford at the four, assuming that lineup with Aaron Baines in it. Which, if I'm the Celtics, and the Sixers do come out with Simmons at four and Embiid at the five, I do want to see Aaron Baines. I want to see Aaron Baines a lot more than I have.
Aaron Baines was used well last year when they needed defense, then they needed a rim protector.
He's a perfect complement to Al Horford.
Also, like, in the playoffs, all of a sudden the man found his three-point stroke.
Yeah, his shot looked almost as bad as Markelle Fultz's, just like the way he shoots it.
But the difference between him and Fultz is his went in.
His goes in.
Right.
Like, same with Al Horford. If you watch just Al Horford shoot the ball from the three, you're like, oh my God, what is that man doing? But the ball goes in, so it doesn't matter.
Right, so it's like, all right, it looks ugly, but who cares?
Like, Aaron Baines also does the thing where, like, his legs are, like, beyond shoulder width apart.
Yeah.
Like, that's how low he gets. It's weird. But the ball goes in.
And that's all that matters. It's all that counts on the scoreboard.
I'm pretty sure he had a stretch of like 3 for 3 in like one series.
That had to be huge.
This man's like 1,000% from 3-point line for those three shots.
Yeah.
Which I think is, hold on, I'm going to look up Shaq's stats.
From the 3-point line?
From the 3-point line. See, career-wise, how many threes he actually sunk.
Many. Tons.
Shaq? Totals. Here we go.
Shaquin?
Oh, what? You'll guess how many three-point shots Shaq made.
Just like the number?
Career. Number.
Three.
One.
Oh! Wow.
He went 1 for 2 in 95-96 in Orlando.
And then he never shot another three?
And then he never made one again. He's 1 for 22 career-wise.
Wow.
So in the playoffs last year, Aaron Baines made more threes than Shaq ever did in his life. Oh, let's
you gonna look up his high school stats?
I'm sure high school stats. He didn't need to take a three.
Right. He was just dominating.
Walk in, dunk the
ball. I'm sure it was the same thing at LSU.
Probably.
But
Shaq went 0 for 0 in the playoffs. Did not take a three in the playoffs.
Yeah. So there you go. But with the Sixers, I agree. I think it helps. Does it make them better enough
scary? No.
Not even close.
They're not scary.
No, they're not scary. Doesn't really concern anyone. It's just, you know, we'll see how it plays out. They've got young talent. They've got name brand stars. I just don't think they have the depth to continue or to push for this whole process that everyone keeps talking about that I've yet to see actually work out.
Right.
Because if I'm trusting a process, that process better lead me to at least an Eastern Conference appearance, and we haven't got there yet. So we'll see. It is kind of young, but we'll see. Anyway, are we breaking it down?
Yeah, let's go ahead and break it down. Why not?
Are you giving it to me? I thought we were
giving it. I think the iPad's down. So. Oh,
all right, so you'll fix the technology and then we'll get into it. So, Rachel, shall we break it down? The Monday night showdown between two of the NFL's best in the Los Angeles Rams and Kansas City Chiefs has been moved from its original destination of Mexico City. The game was moved from Azteca Stadium late Tuesday afternoon after concerns over the field's conditions that led to players on both sides threatening to sit out the game over fear of safety. The league has since moved the game to the Rams' LA Memorial Coliseum for the Monday night game on ESPN. Drama in the Bay Area continues, and this time it's not the Raiders. Following an overtime loss to the Clippers, in which Kevin Durant and Draymond Green had a heated exchange after Green did not get a shot off in time to close the fourth quarter, Warriors head coach Steve Kerr announced the former Defensive Player of the Year would be suspended one game without pay. Apparently, the beef carried over into the locker room postgame, where Green continued to curse in Durant's direction and made comments regarding his impending contract decision this summer. The Warriors characterized the suspension as one regarding, quote, conduct detrimental to the team, and won Tuesday's contest against the Atlanta Hawks without Green on the floor. And we're back here on Colbert and Dubs. So,
official status, Facebook is down. The iPad has died.
Maybe the iPad has died. Tragic. So we're going without Facebook Live today. We're a true radio show once again. We're back. These are like the old days last year, back in October when we didn't know what a Facebook Live was. And now we're going back to our radio roots. I love it. Yeah. So
that's one way to look at it.
Yeah, you always got to look. Shine
the
positive
light. Or you could look at it and be like, wow, Jared did not wake up in time to charge the iPad.
I choose not to look at things negatively.
We're having a good week. Staying positive here.
Everything looking up. Don't hate on it. You got some sleep. Now you're more well rested. That's how I look at it. So, got the feet up. There's no one to impress on Facebook Live. Just kicking the feet up. Let's talk some NFL right now.
Let's do it.
Saints absolutely whooped the Bengals. Dominated. It wasn't even close. You forgot the Bengals were even 4-1 at the beginning of the year.
Because the Bengals aren't good. Newsflash.
Yeah, the Bengals aren't great. I will definitely say the Bengals aren't great, but the Saints, are they the best team in the NFL?
They're looking like it.
Right? Because you beat the Rams. You've got somewhat of a defense.
I feel like that's the rite of passage. You beat the Rams. There you go.
Bam! Right? I mean, what else do you want them to do? You want them to beat the Pats? You want them to beat the Chiefs? We'll get there when the Saints are in the Super Bowl. But for right now, the Saints look like the bona fide best team in the league. You've got Drew Brees, who's that veteran 38-year-old guy who's still slinging it around like he's 22. Michael Thomas, best receiver in the NFL. Best hands I've seen in a while. Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, duo backfield. Forget about it. Saints, best team in the NFL. Any contention to that?
No.
No? Yeah, there's not much to talk about. I mean, the Saints,
best team in the NFL.
Yeah.
At least right now. Season can change. A lot of weeks left, but for the foreseeable future, this is a Saints train that will just keep on rolling.
Keep on rolling. It's a Saints freight train. I love it. For right now, though, let's talk about someone who is not in the NFL. It's an NFL topic, but this dude just refused to show up this year. And that is Mr. Le'Veon Bell. Most people's number one overall pick in fantasy football.
A little anecdote here. Shout out to our friend Mikey. He had the first overall pick, drafted Le'Veon Bell, was plagued with injuries. His team is absolutely awful. He got his first win of the season last week.
Congratulations, Mikey.
But a few weeks ago, he traded Le'Veon Bell for DeSean Jackson. And I was like, what are you doing? You could have gotten so much more for Le'Veon Bell. You traded him for DeSean Jackson. Now he just looks like a genius. He picked up DeSean Jackson off of waivers.
For nothing. Yeah, exactly. Beautiful move. Do you guys do keepers in that league? Do you get to keep a player?
Not keepers. So
guys aren't advanced.
So it didn't matter.
Yeah, that's all right. Maybe you'll one day be in a Dubs run fantasy football league. It's like a well-oiled machine. We've got rules everywhere. It's like an NFL-style draft. It's beautiful. We love it. Maybe join in one of these days. Who knows? We'll see. We'll see if a spot opens up. You know, maybe take a trip to New Jersey in the summer. Who knows? Coburn and Dubs. Who knows? Anyway,
I never caught a Mets game this year either.
Yeah, lucky you.
I'm sure there was a few. Maybe I could have brought some Red Sox magic.
Yeah, sure. We did miss the Mets and Red Sox when the Mets came here.
They're here, yeah.
It's all right. The Yankees suck.
Season was just over.
Yes, yeah, you're right. For both teams, the season was decided, we'll say. Not over, but for both teams, the season was decided. Le'Veon Bell, what do you make of it? Because I kind of look at it and say, he's doing what Earl Thomas wanted to do, but Earl Thomas didn't want to give up the money in the end. Le'Veon Bell's walking out on $14.5 million here. Is that the smart move for him in terms of free agency?
See, this is what baffles me, is who... I don't know. I'm sure there's some team, but I do not know who is going to give that man the money he wants right now. If you looking at him and go, if I piss this guy off for a second,
yeah,
he's just not going to show up.
Right. His teammates are not fans of him right now.
Right.
His own teammates.
Exactly. And if your player's on another team and your GM's like, what if we brought in Le'Veon Bell? You're like, I don't want to work with that guy at all. Yeah. He's just, he's, you know, Dan from accounting. He's just that guy that's just like, I hate my coworker.
Right.
It's you like, show up to work.
Come on,
you
Dan.
You show up to work and you're like, ugh, this guy again.
Yeah. It's a struggle. But.
It was funny. Someone brought, obviously, whenever a player's in the news.
We've got breaking news.
The other side of the MLB.
We've got breaking news. The NL Cy Young Award winner is the best pitcher in baseball, Jacob DeGrom. Woohoo! For best season since 1909. Just wanna put that out there. That was a loud yell. That was
well deserved.
It was very high pitched in my voice, but that came right from my soul. That was the 8-year-old in me that came out and said, Jacob DeGrom. ERA of 1.7 this year. 24 straight quality starts. That's 3 runs or less 24 straight times. That is an MLB record. 4th Mets player to ever win the award. I think the last Cy Young of the Mets, if I'm not wrong, I think it was Matt Harvey won the NL Cy Young. And then after that...
I think he did.
Yeah, and then I think Doc Gooden, Tom Seaver. The other ones are escaping me. Nolan Ryan, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But, yeah. We'll look that up. We'll fact check at the end of the show. Yeah, maybe. But yeah, Jacob DeGrom, NL Cy Young. I hate to interrupt you. We were talking about Dan from accounting.
What's funny is that those are more awards for that New York team than the other New York team has won.
Yeah, I mean, because we got quality players. They got nice contracts that they just chuck in. I mean, they won 100 plus games. So, they've got good players.
They won 100 games, but that's it.
Right.
They didn't win the division. They didn't win the World Series.
They won the wild card game.
They didn't win a Silver Slugger Award.
No, they did not.
They didn't win a Gold Glove Award, I don't think. They didn't win Rookie of the Year. They didn't win.
Yeah, they didn't. That was a hot point of contention for a lot of Yankees fans. Shohei Ohtani.
Showtime. I love it. I think Shohei should have won it. Shohei should have won it.
Not a Gleyber Day fan?
No.
Yeah, I wonder why. But yeah, well, both good young players. But yeah, I agree. They're not a single award. Mets know how to do it in style. If you're gonna have a 77 win season, you might as well do it in style. And Jacob DeGrom did it in style. I love it. There's no better way to do it. But yeah, back to Le'Veon Bell for a hot second. He's Dan from accounting. Nobody wants this guy. I agree.
I wouldn't want to play with him.
Yeah.
If I'm a GM, I wouldn't want the headache of signing with him.
Right, because you're giving him a lot of money, the money that he wants, which is a lot. It's
right.
A lot.
I don't know who wants this. I'm sure there is some team in the NFL that just Le'Veon Bell's available and signs him for a buttload of money. Someone's going to do it.
Honestly, a few weeks ago, the rumor was like, okay, if he's going to get traded, the 3 teams that he'll go to would be the Miami Dolphins, the Green Bay Packers, or the New York Jets. Right now, You look at the Green Bay Packers and you say, Aaron Jones is playing really well for them in the backfield. So no need for that headache, no need for that contract. Right. So free agency, bam, take the Packers out of the equation. Aaron Rodgers loves Aaron Jones too. Bam, take the Packers out of the equation. Miami. Yeah, you've got Frank Gore who's kind of bell cowing it a tad bit, splitting carries with Kenyon Drake. But when Kenyon Drake plays, he's pretty good. The only thing is that Frank Gore somehow at the age of 3,000.
He's doing it all.
Right. Is still doing really good. So it's not really much of a Kenyon Drake issue. It's like, wow, Frank the Tank is still running and running well. So let's keep that duo going. It's a grounded pound and I love it.
I would, if I'm a Miami fan, I would rather have Le'Veon Bell than backfield by committee.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying, like, I'm looking towards next year is what I'm saying, and you're not going to really trust,
right.
Which I don't want to put anything against Frank Gore because he's continued to just prove me wrong, but you're not going to trust Frank Gore for the foreseeable future.
Right.
Maybe you've seen enough of Kenyon Drake at this point where you could say, you know, I'd like him to be the bell cow, because if you're going to sign someone like Le'Veon Bell, you're pretty much ignoring whoever's behind him.
Right.
And that's what they did with James Conner last year. You barely saw anything of James Conner, which is why a lot of people were like, oh, wow, the Steelers are going to be hurting without Le'Veon Bell. And then Conner came in. It's like, oh, wow, this guy was really good. They just never used him. That's right. What you do when you have Le'Veon Bell. You never use the second guy.
Right. Like the Steelers don't want him back.
No, absolutely not. They're done. They've cleaned out his locker. They wiped their hands clean. They've got James Conner.
If I'm the Steelers, that was his one chance of getting the money he asked for from Pittsburgh. And now that he said, no, I'm not going to show up. It's like, well, see ya. Yeah.
Adios.
Toodles.
Yeah. Toodaloo. Right.
Like some holdout plan he had there at Le'Veon Bell. Oh, hold out. They'll suffer. They'll pay me big time. And then they don't suffer because James Conner was really good.
Right. He's got to be sitting in, because he was in Miami working out. He had to be sitting on the beach in South Beach and just being like, oh man, this guy.
Like,
yeah, this guy's really hurting my case.
Oops.
Yeah. So that's Le'Veon in a nutshell. We won't really talk about this. I do want to mention the fact that we put verbatim the words Brown spank Falcons in this topic sheet, and it somehow made its way onto the topics post on social media, which I love. Because
like
a lot of the things that we put on this topic sheet before the show.
I feel like Kelly just verbatim, word for word, whatever he put on.
Oh, copy and paste. No, of course. I mean, I wouldn't expect anything less.
I kind of want to see what we can sneak by her.
Ooh, that could be a fun game.
We got spank. We got spank on,
right.
on online.
Maybe that was a creative decision and say, like we got a jam-packed show. Let's just toss Brown spank Falcons just for the heck of it.
But also on the sheet we got here, you wrote down no Hugh, no problem, ? And my answer to that is correct. You know why? Because Hugh was the problem.
I know. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Hugh was the problem. Remove Hugh. No problem.
No
anymore.
Problem. Exactly. The man won 3 games in 3 years. How?
3 games. One in 2 years. Two years.
In 2 years, he won 1 game. If you're talking about 2 full seasons, he went 1-15 and 0-16. How does anyone have such a low success rate and still have a job?
I've been saying it ever since Corbin and Dubs was created. You accidentally win more games than the amount that Hugh Jackson actually won.
Yeah.
You're 1-15. Management's like, growing pains.
Right. Like for the Browns, how long are you going to point to growing pains?
And I'm so positive that someone in that conference meeting or whatever, the exit meeting from the team said to the group, well, we can only go up from here. And then the one result that goes down from 1-16, 0-16, and then they still went, growing pains. This is the real year.
And then it wasn't. Yeah.
Like you had the same roster.
Right. It makes no sense.
They made next to no changes in Cleveland, except for bringing Tyrod Taylor and bringing Baker Mayfield, bringing Carlos Hyde, who they traded away.
Jarvis Landry.
Okay, so they made a few changes.
So they made changes, yeah.
But in terms of like defense, offensive line, you know, you added bits and pieces.
Right.
And you still said to yourself, no, the guy that won us 1 game in the span of 2 years,
he's the guy.
He's the one that's going to take this team to the promised land. And no duh. They go 2-5-1 or whatever.
Yeah. I think they win 2 games?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They won 2 games.
They did before he was fired.
2-5 or 2-whatever-1. And then you go, okay, fine. I don't get it. Where was that decision last year?
Yeah, last year when you were 0-12. Like what? And then you would go to 0-16, you're like, yeah, well, let's be patient. Let's just be patient. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't get you gave that man such a long leash. It's like if you're walking your dog and you're on one block, and you have a leash long enough that the dog can run up a block, turn the corner, and then run up another block somewhere down the road. You don't even know where that dog is. And you're just like, yeah, no, it's fine.
Right. Same with the point of the leash.
There may be no dog on the end of that leash. You can't even see it.
That's come back, long... like you follow the end of the leash and you get back and the dog right. doesn't have a head anymore. And it's like, ah, right. well.
And it's like,
growing pains, we'll get another one.
We'll still go on a walk.
Yeah, yeah. It's we'll like a pick it up. Yeah. It's insane. Now he's with the Bengals. The Bengals. The Bengals. Like you, how do you still have Marvin Lewis? That's good question.
There are too many. Last week we were talking about how many mediocre quarterbacks get paid big money and stick around. Too many mediocre coaches are given like they were good enough.
Right. Like Jason Garrett having a job is criminal. Sure. Marvin Lewis has been in this league for 15 years and has never won a playoff game. What are you doing, Mike Brown?
It's so ridiculous. Like, if the Red Sox were an NFL team, they'd still have John Farrell. Like, right. The Red Sox, yeah. The MLB is a place where you can make it to the playoffs twice, win the division twice, and then due to playoff performance, be like, yeah, you suck, dude.
Yeah,
and
right.
fire him, and correctly fire him. The Yankees, they made it to the ALCS, and they said to Joe Girardi, like, you didn't do enough for us.
Yeah.
The MLB.
They were one game away.
Basketball, too. Basketball, you could play, you could coach six games for a team, go 1-5 and be like, yeah, no, this didn't work out. The NFL is the only league where teams are too willing to, like, wait and see if he figures it out.
It's the old man
like,
league.
They're so accepting of just mediocrity for years that it's going to take them to suck for so long. And even then, to suck for 2.5 years where you win 3 games in a span of 3 years as a head coach.
And still somehow have a job. Yeah. It's very strange because I think the NFL is a league where like the owners and the general managers focus a lot on the message. The message that this coach has where it's like, you know, even I hate on this guy, but Bill O'Brien with the Houston Texans. The Houston Texans have not done anything in years. I love Bill O'Brien.
They're figuring it out now.
They are figuring it out now. But he's a guy, Jason Garrett's a guy, Marvin Lewis is a guy, that they focus on the message. You know, Jason Garrett constantly, we're going to fight, and claps his hands on the sideline, you know, when his team gets absolutely blown out by a jillion points. It's like, yeah, we're going to fight, we're going to do this, you know, we have got the right guys in the locker room, we got a right guy attitude, that's how we're going to build this team. It's like, okay, but why has it been 6 years, if you're the Bengals, why has it been 15 years since we've won a play?
15 years.
Yeah. What is, like, how long do you want to hinge on the success of this guy? Last year, it was like a given at one point. Like, oh, yeah, Marvin Lewis is on his way out. And then the end of the season, it's like, oh, actually, we're going to extend him. What? What did he do? You were under 500. You didn't make the playoffs. What are you doing? What are you doing?
I think teams are just so dumb. Owners, NFL,
the NFL is the dumbest league in sports.
Are the dumbest owners anywhere.
Yeah, and you would think like the owners are the guys getting hit in the head by 300-pound linemen on the field every week. It's like, how are you this dumb? What is going on? We've got guys in hockey missing teeth and they've got smarter decisions than that.
Like there is only one head coach who should have had his job for 15 plus years, and that's Bill Belichick.
Right, rightfully so.
Because he's been good. Even when Tom Brady went out in injury, they went 11-5 and missed the playoffs because they're just two better wild card teams. Like, that was the worst season.
Yes.
Marvin Lewis can miss the playoffs by a billion games, and they'll be like, yeah, we'll get him next year.
No.
You're not going to get him
no,
next year.
No, you're not. How many times do you have to see that you won't get him this year, next year, and the year after that?
The Bengals owner, whoever he is.
Mike Brown. Yeah.
Was probably Mikey. Rubbing himself when the Bengals started off 4-1 and was like, oh, I'm so smart for keeping. Newsflash, NFL season's not 5 games long.
Right. Things change.
They're now 5-4.
They look bad.
They're not a good football team.
No, they're not. They're not a good football team at all. And the absence of A.J. Green is going to kill them. But yeah, and Mike McCarthy is the same way. Yeah, the guy won a Super Bowl in 2010, but my God!
But what since then? What?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, thank you. You did your service for 1 year. You did a great job. But we have a generational talent in Aaron Rodgers. How are we not in the NFC Championship game every single year? How? How?
Like, at least Sean Payton, like, shows up every once in a while with Drew over there in New Orleans.
The Saints are consistent, man. The Saints are consistent.
It took a miracle final play to knock them out of the playoffs last year. That was a miracle. You can't blame Sean Payton for that one. And he has been consistent.
Right.
They've, you know, weak division share here and there, but actually they have one of
the strongest
divisions.
Yeah, I mean, let's not count the Falcons and Bucks, but the Panthers are up there.
I just remember the 1 year where the Panthers got in at 7-8-1.
Right.
Which is
That was the NFC South dark days, but
yeah.
They've since picked it up.
Right. So that was like Sean Payton's 1 year of suck. We're like, okay. Yes, you did suck this year, but you did win.
I also believe that was Bounty Gate year, where Peyton was suspended for a period of time, and you know the defensive coordinator Greg Williams, who's now the interim head coach with the Browns.
Which I'm surprised he survived that.
But, right, he's the head coach in the Browns right now, doing a pretty damn good job, if you ask me.
I'm talking about Sean Payton.
Oh, right, like Sean Payton surviving.
This is like a top down thing.
Yes,
where it's like Sean Payton is telling guys to injure people, and you're like,
it's like, yeah, all right, fine.
Which, like, I guess it worked out, but that should have been it.
Yeah. Instead, it wasn't.
They're so unwilling to move on. And
it makes no sense.
And I think we're talking about it last year with Jerry Jones and how he's like, that Jason Garrett was his guy and he just did not want to be wrong.
Right.
If he fires Jason Garrett, well, that's him admitting he was wrong, and oh, God forbid NFL owner be wrong.
Exactly. It's like, we all make mistakes, dude. Like, just move on. Honestly, I feel like it would be, if you're a Bengals fan, you would finally be like, Mike Brown, thank you. You would be grateful. He would get such a warm welcome from his fan base. And like, there would be no lashback for this. Like, yeah. None of it.
He's done nothing to deserve his spot.
But here we are today talking about how he still does have a job. Anyway, real quick, before we head to the look ahead, I did want to talk. I didn't want to really talk about the Titans-Pats game, per se. Not worried about the Pats. I don't think you are either. And we could talk about whether the Titans are legit or not, but what I do want to talk about is Deion Lewis's comments after the game. He said, that's what you get when you go cheap. You get your ass kicked. How do you feel about your former running back sentiments towards his old team?
I mean, Deion Lewis was a good player for the Patriots, but with the Patriots just during his tenure here, they always had a billion running backs to pick from, and it seemed like they were never just fully willing to give Deion Lewis the spotlight, and so maybe I think part of it comes from him just like never really like I think he deserved it. Like there are stretches of time where it seemed like he was supposed to be the guy for the Patriots, kind of
right.
like what Sony Michel is now.
Yes, which is James White even too.
James White. Well, James White has always been the out of the backfield receiving running
right.
back.
Yes.
So he's obviously always been a part of the conversation, but in terms of between the tackles, you know, bell cow kind of running back. Excuse me. It seemed like Deion Lewis was supposed to be that guy, and then he just never was.
Yeah, and then that injury in his last season, where he tore his ACL, you know, didn't really help him, but
right.
He got his payback, and yeah, I don't think there's really any hard feelings over here in New England about Deion Lewis. The Patriots are doing well, and they found their guys in James White and Sony Michel, so... It's just interesting. It's interesting to see someone openly talk against Bill Belichick and the Patriots, especially when, you know, they're still playing.
It's happening. Cassius Marsh calling out the Patriots for not being fun to a few players around the league. Former Patriots players calling out for it not being fun.
Yeah, well, guess what? Jobs aren't always fun.
Right.
when you're successful.
One thing I do want to point out from the Patriots. I know we're really over, and you might get yelled at Webbin. God forbid.
I know.
My stepdad, Fred, pointed out during the game, he was like, Hogan never seems to get open. Like, Tom's not throwing to him. He just can't seem to get separation. And looking back and listening to other sports radio, it was like, actually, Hogan did get open a lot. Tom Brady was just always throwing it to Josh Gordon. So we kind of had a bit of a conversation where, am I worried? No. They'll figure it out. ESPN said they had, the second easiest schedule down the stretch.
Right.
They could probably go 13-3. Like, they have a legitimate chance to do that.
Yes, I agree.
But it does seem like Tom Brady, maybe not physically showing his age, which, who would blame him at this point?
Right.
He's 41 years old. But he does seem like he's forcing the ball a lot. Forcing the ball here and there, or just missing his guys.
Maybe Hogan, it's him Hogan trying was, to prove that father time isn't a factor.
Right. Hogan was targeted once, and it was on a throwaway. So, they give him the target, but he wasn't legitimately getting the ball. And I don't know. Fred also added he's getting nervous feet. People are on sports radio talking about that.
We're on sports radio.
We're sports radio. So we're talking about it. I would agree. He maybe a little more consciously in his mind is thinking about if I get hit, that might be it. Like if a big hit's landed on me, that's it. And while this offensive line has been better since the start of the season, you know, it's still not one of the best offensive lines in the league. So if he's constantly thinking of if one of those defensive linemen breaks through, I can't get hit, then obviously that's going to affect how you're throwing the ball. And I think it really showed in that game. Is it going to be a long-term issue? I don't think so. But in that game, that offense did not look great. And I think a lot of it stemmed from Tom Brady.
Yeah. And that's the first time I think you can hear any Patriots fan say that in a long time. And again, it's...
You can talk about how the defense couldn't stop a nosebleed, but you look at where the Titans started the ball every drive.
Right.
Half the time it was in their own territory. They're in Patriots territory.
Yeah, that's not good. And you're for the Patriots offense, that's your trademark right there.
I tweeted out at the game, I did not have fun. I did not have fun watching that game. It was not enjoyable.
I bet it wasn't. They're never really in the game, but, you know, looking ahead, if you're the Patriots, you don't really have any worry in your own division. So you can still end up 11-5, 12-4, 13-3, and you're winning that division easily. So they just got to figure things out before playoff time. They're one of those teams that has the luxury of doing that. Yeah, right.
I think Josh Daniels is just like, hey, Tom, stop it. And Tom's like, all right, fine, I'll stop it. Yeah. Boom, problem solved.
Boom. So anyway, let's get to the look ahead real quick. I got to run. So let's do it quickly.
Also, did you write this, Gerard?
Yes, I do. I consistently call you Gerard. I feel like you should just get used to it now. When I write it down on paper,
he spelled it Gerrod, which just looks putrid.
It looks ugly, but it sounds nice coming out of my mouth when I call you Gerard. I like it. It's your new nickname. No, just enjoy it. You're adapting.
I'm not going to enjoy it.
All right. Well, it's a thing.
It's Coburn and Dubs.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Gerard and Dubs.
Gerard and Dubs. That's what it's going to be. It's not a thing. So look ahead. Number 3 Notre Dame will take on number 12 Syracuse at a game with playoff implications on Saturday afternoon from South Bend. That coveted showdown between 2-1 loss teams in the Kansas City Chiefs and Los Angeles Rams will take place on Monday night from LA on ESPN. And the Minnesota Vikings will travel to Chicago to take on Mitchell Trubisky and the first place Bears. First time we've been able to say that in a very long time. Da Bears.
It's my NFC team, baby.
In an NFC North matchup on Sunday Night Football, the pick'em for this week will be released either later tonight or tomorrow before the Thursday night football game. Jared hasn't picked. It's okay. We've had a long day. Naps, late to the studio. We're good. We're riding high. With that, it has been quite an adventure here today on Corbin and Dubs.
This is hands down the weirdest episode, I think, from at least from my perspective. I think I just woke up, look at my phone, see it's 5:55. It was like 5:55. Text from Rachel, like, "Yo, are you coming?" And I'm like, "Oh dear Lord." And I think
lucky for you, I've been watching you on the sticks over here.
Yeah, just everything's labeled.
I got it down. I got it down. But yeah,
I just felt pretty awful.
We figured it out.
You figured it out.
It's all good. And
the iPad
We're
died.
Positive.
We're staying positive. It's a positive week, Rachel.
You know what?
We just keep going up.
You know what? We can only go up from here.
Exactly. Unless we're the Browns. So with that, for our producer, Rachel Lowe, and for Gerard Colbert, I am Ryan.
Stop it.
I am Ryan Dubs-Barrow. Thank you for listening to Colbert and Dubs every Wednesday at 6 p.m. We'll see you next time.